January 15, 2021 is the Watt for Pedro Show. Watt from Pedro Show. Happy Friday. Started off with Up Against the Wall, John Coltrane, and then Emmett Kelly, Leonardo Lisch. Brother Matt's on the Love Grotto Pleasure Point a couple miles south here because we're still in quarantine mode. But people, I am not totally man alone because of those Skype engineers Estonia with their righteous Skype invention. I got Mr. Emmett Kelly with me. Welcome aboard, Emmett.
Hello.
Yeah. Leonardo Lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. You know, I want to know where this music comes. Let's talk about your journey. For example, can you give me your earliest musical recollection, please, Emmett?
Yeah. I mean, my parents are musicians, and so when I grew up, an earliest one, but I guess when I was like a little kid, I used to sleep on the amps at my mom's rehearsals.
Ah, so you grew up around musical equipment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And where was this? Where was this, Emmett?
In L.A. in Van Nuys.
Val.
Yeah, hell yeah.
That's okay, man. Perk. You know, Steve Perkins, right? Val guy, my favorite. I think
we went to the same high school as him.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Small world. Yeah, the west side, right, because Tarzan is where Reseda's where you had Pat. He's in the kind of east part now, Studio City, but still Val.
Okay. Yeah.
But anyway, getting back to your story. So, like, you grew up in a music fucking environment.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, were you pushed, like, piano lessons, amplifier lessons?
Not really. I mean, like I kind of just came to it on my own. They weren't trying to get me to do anything. I mean, you know, they love music. My family loves music, but they also were struggling musicians, and so they weren't, you know. But it was like they believe in music, so they were stoked when I got into it.
You know, there's cats like Ian MacKay. I had him on the show a little while back. His boy ain't into it. sometimes it's like the opposite thing. Bruce Luce from Flipper was telling me, I think his boy does lawyer. So sometimes, you're not part, what do they call it, the acorn falls far from the tree? Sometimes a squirrel eats fucking acorn and then shits it out miles away. I think that's what nature wants.
I mean, maybe a musician might be good with having a lawyer in the family, you know?
Good point, brother. So, let me ask you about school. Were you in the band, marching band or the choir or shit like that?
I attempted to do a choir when I was younger, you know, but like then I just hated school in general. So I just kind of fucked off entirely. And then I went to music school for college.
Well, I kind of asked that, Emmett, because some schools got rid of their fucking music program. So
I had a music class in high school, and the guy who was the teacher was really cool, but you know, he knew that the whole thing was bullshit, and you know, I mean, none of the kids cared about anything. We didn't learn anything. I mean, there was like one class that was, you know, I don't know. He was a cool guy though. He was a good guy. He was really encouraging to me. Like he hooked me up with like a mini Moog synthesizer when I was. He got this woman like to donate it to school so he could give it to me.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. But see, contributions sometimes they're not just the regular curriculum, right? It has something to do with personality and I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like, when I got into music, I was like, man, I wish that we all like just had to learn how to read music as children, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
You know, you start to envy like the old school way of doing things where like, you know, I got into the Beach Boys as like the first like kind of like really sophisticated thing I was into, and it was like, damn, these guys just like churn out these like gorgeous harmonies, and it's like, you know, it's because it's deep in them, like the theory of music, you know.
But what if we were taught how to read and write music like we are the alphabet?
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing.
We wouldn't even think about it, right? It would be just second nature of us being able to communicate with each other.
It'd be so cool.
Yeah. So, I guess. You know, you get out of it what you put into it, but I think it does depend on the cat. There's a fucking art to teaching. There just is. There's just some trippy thing about it. Both my sisters are teachers. I'm curious about going back to home and you buying your first record with your own money. What was that?
Damn, I don't know. I mean, like...
Remember, it's a Watt from Pedro show, so there's no hard questions and there's no wrong answers.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that the first time that I recall buying a CD, you know, like it was like my sister had made this mixtape and there was a Sonic Youth song on there, Sugar Cane, and I was like, I really like that song, and so I went and bought a Sonic Youth album, and it was Confusion is Sex, which is like the opposite of Sugar Cane.
What's the first? Yeah, I'm right back. First one.
I was like, what the hell is this? You know, it took me like about 3 weeks to realize that I was really into it.
Well, I mean, I asked that because, you know, when you're a kid, you don't have a lot of money. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah. But on the other hand, you brought up an important thing, I think, called the mixtape. That was really important in the old days of the movement.
Totally, man.
That's how you found out about shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, you pass them around, right? And you could turn on people to shit, and they could turn you on into shit. Yeah, it's
totally
really important. What about the first gig you saw, Emmett?
Well, I mean, you know, I grew up going to these bar gigs that my family were doing.
Ah,
so it was
that's
like,
right.
You know, I think the first one that like I remember really was like being at like Harvell's in like the, you know, late 80s or something, or, you know.
Harvell's? You're talking about that club in Santa Monica?
Yeah. You know, it's kind of crazy. Like, my mom's band, my mom actually, like, helped convince that place to do live music, you know, because her band was looking for a gig and she liked the bar.
Well, you know, I found out about that because Dave Childs had to close his Liquid Kitty and started having his punk rock barbecues there.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, he got a small world.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Hard to fucking park.
Yeah.
That neighborhood. Okay. Definitely. Okay, I want to play Drum Circle.
Thank you. Oh,
Watch for Pedro show. Drum Circle from Emmett Kelly. BX brand new from Bruno in Netherlands, Rotterdam. He's getting his regular band Stoma, but because of the situation, he's been doing this, what he calls his ventriloquist project, which is him playing everything, right? You can do this now with these looping dealios, right?
Yep.
Right. And Hands Rotten from Switzerland after that with Twinger for Departure. 42 from Pete Kane, his brand new album. Great. Pat Kane. One half of Model Home. Great cat. Guided by Voices, Slaughterhouse. Foodie from Osaka with Stars in the Night Sky. And then Biscuit Mouth from England with Kenneth the Lampooner. Something somebody'd say over there, right? Although, I remember when I was younger, there was National Lampoon, some kind of comedy magazine for college kids, I guess. I can't remember. But let's get back down. It's a musical. How'd you get on what you got playing?
You what?
How did you get on what you're working now for music? How'd that happen?
I'm not really sure. I mean, I guess I was in a band I had my own kind of like normal song band for a while, and it was cool. I loved it, but I guess I started to get kind of disenchanted by it, and I kind of wanted to go back to the drawing board and figure out why you do any of it in the first place. And so I got interested in I found like a portal into it through learning about synthesizer and how it works, and it kind of reconditioned my ear to be more like thinking about music as listening to it as opposed to gesturing with like a guitar. Cause, you know, the guitar is my instrument normally, but it's like a, you know, you get. I was getting tired of where I was. You know, it was like Groundhog's Day. You know, like every time you pick up the guitar, it's like, fuck, okay, I've done this like 1,000 times, you know, like what, it's I need almost, to find the new thing, you know.
Can I make a guess here, Emmett? It's almost getting to the point like it couldn't teach you anything anymore.
Yeah, well, I needed something to crack me open, you know what I mean? Like,
So when you mentioned synthesizer and then that early music teacher in school.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the connect? Oh, wow.
Well, no, I mean, that was just kind of my first entry point into it. I mean, it's kind of weird. Like when I went to school for music school, my whole intention was to get into electronic music, and it's just weird because I totally abandoned that quickly, and because the program at school was pretty lame, and so I quickly abandoned that, and then I got in really into guitar and kind of more old fashioned music, and then you know my whole life happened, and then of course now I'm like returning back to what I was interested in when I was a teenager, which is just kind of bizarre, you know?
Yeah. And do you think it's just a bunch of circumstance, a bunch of coincidence, or do you think there's some kind of arc, some kind of path?
Well, I mean, I've always been really attracted to a synthesizer, you know, like not really like the keyboard. I'm not good at the keyboard, you know?
And you know, so that's a good point, Emmett. A synthesizer really ain't a fake keyboard, right?
No, it's a totally different thing. It's like the electricity coming out of the wall. So in my mind, it's almost like an acoustic instrument the same way that a guitar is. It's just that it's made out of electricity, you know? Like,
can I tell you about the first time I saw Pere Ubu? Me and Dee Boone and Georgie went up to Hollywood at the Whiskey. And this guy, Alan Ravenstein, his synthesizer's on a table. It's two boxes. And there's no cables. I mean, no keyboard. It's only cables.
Yeah, totally.
And there's these sounds coming out. It's not fake horn. It's not fake string section. It's not organ, clavichord.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a certain kind of purity.
Definitely.
Do you know about this lady, Delia Derbyshire?
Of course. Yeah, yeah. The tape music.
Right. Okay. Tape music. Yeah. So. Okay. Did this teacher that gave that arrangement for you to get that synthesizer, did he turn you on to shit like this?
No, I mean, he was pretty pretty basic, like, in terms of what he was interested in. I was at the time actually really into, like, Spaceman 3. You know, I was a teenager and I was really into Spaceman 3 and then what, like, Sonic Boom was doing with all the synthesizers and stuff. And so I knew about, I'd done my own kind of research and he played this, my teacher played this, like, a video about electronic music, and it was a video about this guy showing you how a big modular Moog system works, and I was like, that's a Moog synthesizer, and he's like, holy shit, you know, like, you know about this, you know, and like the, you know, the rest of the class is like totally doesn't give a shit, you know what I mean, but I was stoked, so, well, I got into it through, like, listening to, like, weird music, you know.
I had Alan on the show a couple times. He's told me some of these synthesizers he used were actually teaching devices. EML, yeah. EML. They had three-letter acronyms and stuff. One of them looked like a little case. In fact, the lid was the keyboard.
Yeah, exactly.
And like capacitance from your fingers. It didn't have, like, physical. Jim O'Rourke, too. I did some gigs with him, and he played this thing, and he said it was actually a teaching aid.
Yeah.
And to teach her how sounds working and shit. And, yeah. You know, one dude I got into as a teenager, even though I'm a bass guy, because I want to be D. Boone's bass player, but his name was Klaus Schulze.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, you know?
Yeah.
And he had this label called Brain, and I guess he broke off from Tangerine Dream and started on his own trip.
Yeah.
And, like, double albums of, like, you know, 40-minute songs and...
Yeah, but I love that stuff.
You know what I used to call it? Headphone music. Because when you wore headphones, man, it was like brain floss.
Yeah.
And you know what? You know, the whole idea of fake keyboard is, like, totally gone.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, people...
No, when I got introduced to that world, it's not the fake keyboard. It's its own entity. That's what I'm trying to say.
Totally, yeah. I mean, there's a whole world out there, you know, of confusing a new approach, you know. I mean, this is like circa 1960s and 70s and stuff is like when the synthesizer kind of blossomed, you know.
Yeah, I remember the first record was a Wendy Carlos, or a Walter then.
Yeah, totally.
And, and reinterpreted Johann Sebastian Bach, and I guess that required the keyboard.
Yeah.
But then there was... Do you know stuff like Tonto's Expanding Headband?
I have heard it. I'm not that into it, but, I mean, it's kind of interesting, I guess.
The synth was the size of a fucking room.
Yeah, I've seen it, actually.
It was at the Devo place for a while in Sunset Boulevard. Mutato?
Interesting. Tonto was there? Interesting.
For a little while. I think it's back in England now. It was two England guys. It's on three of the Stevie Wonder records, actually, as like kind of a bedrock to those rhythms, to like Living in the City and Superstition.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, really interesting kind of thing. Now, did your mom and dad play synthesizer?
No. They were both drummers.
Ah.
Yeah.
There's something about a synthesizer being kind of percussive, though, I will say. Stuff I heard from Martin Subotnick.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely all the elements in it, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess we're talking 80s, 60s, 70s. By 80s, they're using triggers, right? To make heavy metal records. Here's the other thing. They start using synthesizers as pads in heavy metal records.
Yeah.
Because you don't have too much space, too much air, right?
Well, that's weird to me, I think. I like the space.
Yeah, I know. It was like, you know, like, the look at the word, pad.
This sound like, I mean, it's like, why do you want to, I never understood that, honestly. I love the silence in records, you know? Like, why do you want to fill it up with just like an air of nothing, you know? Something you don't even notice, you know?
Yeah, just the word, filler.
Yeah, exactly. Stupid.
It's not a real thing, right? It's just something taking up space.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mentioned some of these synthesizer guys and stuff, but tell us some that you got into.
Well, I mean, I honestly, like, the reason why I got, I mean, well, early on, I was just kind of listening to, like, whoever was, like, I like the Silver Apples and,
oh, you know, Simeon, like Brother Simeon, we just lost him.
Yeah, I know, it's a shame. I mean, like, I was just, like, a kid, like, you know, whatever, you know, just stoner, like, going, I mean, I was into, like, I would go to these places in LA in the valley that were like amazing music. I mean, it's kind of crazy to think that the music world has changed so much since then, but like, all these bands that I was listening, going to seeing shows as a teenager were so gigantic in my life. Like, and like things like, Godzik Pink and the Uphill Gardeners and Nels Klein was around and just blowing my mind with this like weirdo guitar thing that he, you know, and I don't know. I just was searching for stuff and I didn't really get into necessarily like any real actual like synthesizer players until sort of late, way later on. And I lived in Chicago for a long time and one of my good friends from there, this guy named Ben Vida, we used to play a lot of music together and he got really deep into synthesizer and it kind of like opened me up to a lot of stuff.
Was that the Cairo Gang?
The Cairo Gang was my band, yeah.
And he was in there?
He was in there for a minute. I mean, like, he played on one of the records. But, you know, it was the band was never, I mean, the band didn't really, like, turn into, like, an actual ensemble until maybe, like, 10 years ago or something. You know, it was a rotating cast of people.
How long did you live in Chicago, Bennett?
For about 10 years.
And how is it for a Cali guy to live 10 years? You know, we got a bunch of them cats living here now.
Yeah, I know.
David Yao and that great guitar man, Jeff Parker.
Yeah, for sure.
Johnny Machine, the drummer man.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, those guys are like, I love those guys, you know, like, I realized at a certain point, I think I've seen Jeff Parker play more than I've seen anyone else.
Well, he has some kind of resident thing right now, right?
He plays at this place ETA every week, I think, or he used to, obviously, but in Chicago, there used to be a weekly gig similar, but it was more like improvised music, and that was just like incredible like thing to watch, you know.
Why you got inspired, right? That's what's bitching about that shit.
I mean, especially in Chicago, there was such a giant, I mean, there is, but there was specific, you know, such a gigantic scene of just full-on weirdo musicians, you know, and they were playing all the time. Like, you couldn't be a musician of any style without knowing about the most far out shit, you know, which I thought just, you know, huge contrast to a place like LA where you could live your whole life and have only know about one type of music, you know what I mean?
Believe you me. Emmett, we're at the end of the first hour.
Right.
January 15, 2021. Special guest Emmett Kelly. Hold tight for hour two. January 15, 2021. It's the second hour of the Walk for Pedro show.
chestnuts laid back. A crude and self-evident lie. Ah, but most folks didn't care. In fact, the lie was told again, again and again, most everywhere. Foolish path we thought we'd left behind. Looks like we're gonna have to walk on it once again. A rocky road full of dull mistakes. A broken trail of sin. But against all odds, we'll do our best. It's a war we got to try and win. History repeats itself. I know you've heard it said. Up in the morning and climb out of our bed. You try to keep the beast at bay, keep his voice out of your head. Don't know what else can I do. Just hoping there'll be a little joy somewhere once the working day is through. No more lies. Please just tell me something true. Hear the little songbirds singing. They're singing nothing but the truth. So help me, God. Trees up above. If you're lucky, they'll give you a wink and a nod. We'll keep listening to their songs along the way, along this rocky path we trod. Yes, we will. Yes, we will.
Mm-hmm.
for Pedro show. Emmett Kelly with Rod Jarl. I mean, where does that title come from, Emmett?
Fuck if I know, man.
Okay. Some people say, look, why, I don't want to talk about it. That's why I made a song, you know, of course. Yeah. And I had Sam Bennett after that with Little Songbirds. Sam Locke Ward with Improv. Fatso Jetson, Mario Lolly there. Jet Black Boogie. Cairo Gang.
Yeah. The Cairo Gang.
Yeah, the Cairo Gang. So you say it didn't become an ensemble for 10 years, but then you only lived there 10 years.
Well, I mean, it's kind of a long story. I don't know. It was always my band. I mean, I was doing the Cairo Gang since I was in high school, you know?
No, I don't know. That's why you're on the show, so I can learn about you, Emmett.
Yeah. It just kept changing, and, you know, it was just my outlet for songwriting, and it kept changing.
Let me hear about the first, since this goes back to school.
Yeah.
Let me hear about the first version of Cairo Gang.
First version of Cairo Gang was, it was, you know, my friends from the Valley, and we, I don't know. I was just like really into like this really dreamy, spacey kind of like reverbed out shit, you know? And so we played, you know, we would play at like the Raven Playhouse and.
But tell me how you put together the band. You picked certain dudes that like at school after school, you had a bedroom band, basement band.
My friend Rebecca was a singer, and so we used to sing songs together, just the two of us, and then we'd, you know, be like, oh, I know this one dude who can play drums or, you know, whatever, and we it was just friends, yeah. We didn't necessarily, like, look for, like, types of musicians. We were just kind of, like, trying to have fun and do a band, you know?
And right away, did you start writing your own stuff, or did you copy off records?
No, I was doing, well, I was writing songs, but they're, you know, a lot of mimicking other things.
Of course, you're young and you're first starting. What was the first, the Cairo Gang gig?
I think the first gig we played at was at the Raven Playhouse in North Hollywood, the place that The Smell opened up next door to.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay. And how'd it go?
It was great. I mean, you know, it was just, it was like a, you know, 15-year-old's like rad time. You know, I was stoked.
No, but I've had some people on the show, Emmett, and the first gig was a nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, that wasn't the first gig I ever played. It was just, you know, it was my first band.
Oh, so you are by this time a veterano.
Yeah, well, I had like a punk band before that. You know,
what was that?
We were called Scab.
Yeah.
You know, we played at, like, Natural Fudge. Remember that place?
Sure.
And shit like that. And, like, we were just, like, I was just, like, a freak kid for a while. And then I got all, like, moody and started making more, like, moody stuff. You know? I went from being angry to depressed.
Okay. Speaking about being moody and shit, I'm going to play Fonzie.
Hell yeah, Fonzie. Okay.
share it. I like it. Thank you. Good night. With our best friends, Holly Hunt. Fuck yeah, fuck yeah, fuck yeah. Best fucking band in all of Mexico. Fuck yeah.
Watch the Pedro show. Yeah. That was Fonzie from Emmett County. You know, my pop, that this show came on in the 70s. It was called Happy Days.
Yeah.
And my pop told me, you know what? Those were not happy days.
Yeah, right.
Because I've been born in 1957. He's 19 years old. And, yeah, it wasn't like that fucking TV show. Yeah, right. Potsy and that shit. Those guys looked like they were 30.
Yeah.
Potsy looked like he's 50. After that was a defensive butterfly from Good Fuck. Oh, yeah. That's Chicago. The cat from Joan of Arc.
Yeah.
Right, right. And then To Live and Shave in L.A., Motor Profumo. Now, there was a movie Billy Friedkin made called To Live and Die in L.A.
Yeah.
It starts off with some dude bungee jumping off a bridge.
Uh-huh.
That bridge is the Vincent Thomas Bridge, which is between Pedro and Terminal Island here.
Oh, shit.
I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's green. It looks like a green, a small version of the Golden Gate Bridge up in the city. Yeah, yeah. So
Terminal Island is weird.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the native people called it Rattlesnake Island. It is a railroad company called it that, because at the end of your railroad is your terminal, your ending.
Yeah, right.
So they renamed it. They owned everything at one point until we got the harbor and we fucking kicked them to the curb. His name was Cullen Huntington. He bought a mile of wharf up in Santa Monica. That's where he wanted the fucking harbor. But the Navy came in on our side. This is like 110 years ago. And Pedro, actually, we're part of parts of the valley. You know, that's how big the city of L.A. is. We got to keep the name San Pedro because downtown's got a 4th Street, and so do we, you know. So instead of renaming all the streets, they just say, okay, you guys be Pedro. But we're really part of Los Angeles.
Last yeah.
Of years. So what about composition on the synth? Is it just like skateboarding? You just do it until you don't fall down as much?
It's a weird thing because, you know, you attempt to figure out sort of signal flow and control voltage stuff, and it just is like you just go down a rabbit hole, you know, and come out with something. I mean, it's like you generally come up with like have an approach, and then something you know you discover where it could go, you know, because it breathes. It's like a living thing, you know.
Can I ask you with your guitar?
Yeah.
You use pedals?
Yeah, I mean, not so much. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I like fuzz pedals and shit like that, but I'm not really a pedal guy, to be honest. I mean, it's like I have this delay pedal and I barely use it.
Or maybe you use it in a performance, like the dynamic to bring it up for a part, like a solo.
Yeah, well, like a fuzz box for
sure.
Yeah,
that's what I mean.
Like, yeah, yeah. Because I mean, I have like a couple things, but I don't really use pedals like the way a lot of people are into pedals.
Well, know? I'm not talking a lot of people so much as like the synthesis, like you're manipulating sound.
Yeah, yeah. No, the synth is different. I look at it like an instrument. Like it's not so much. I mean, it's obviously there's a lot of processing, but it's not. I mean, it's like the processing is part of the instrument. You know, I mean, it's like with guitar, I like dry sounds and like, you know, like that's where like turning something up beyond as loud as it pop, like a fuzz pedal does is different to me than like putting a weird effect on it or something like, but I mean, I love effects, obviously. I just, you know, more into like good sound, you know?
Let me see if I got this straight. Like with the boxes and a guitar, you're taking a guitar sound and you're manipulating that. With the synthesizer, the manipulation's right at the get-go.
Yeah, I mean, it's you just have a bunch of electricity that you're trying to collide and make music with, you know?
Okay. You know, one of the things about a synth is an oscillator, right?
Yeah.
Oscillator can give you rhythm.
Yeah, for sure.
Because we haven't been really talking about that. We're talking, well, sounds, but sounds in a certain kind of pulse, a certain kind of sequence, a certain kind of pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. For example, the most obvious early example with the rock and roll was Pete Townshend bringing that thing at the beginning. Well,
Bob O'Reilly,
yeah. Yeah. At first, I've heard the version without the end part that Keith Moon put on with the violin. It was just a birthday card for Mayor Baba. Yeah, him and Ronnie Lane made a birthday thing because they were into Mayor Baba. This guy wouldn't talk.
Right.
until he was on his deathbed. You know what he told Pete Townshend?
Who's that? What's that?
Don't worry. Be happy. And remember, that got turned into a tune.
Oh, right.
I think Bobby McFerrin or something. Jazz singer. Yeah. Right. But anyway, to get back, see how random that stuff was? All those hits, but there was kind of a rhythm to it, right?
Well, yeah, totally.
Because I think he made 100 copies of this birthday card thing. The one before Bob O'Reilly, just for Mayor Baba. And he had the credits. He said the synthesizer played its, maybe Baba, Mayor Baba played it, or maybe it played itself.
Yeah, totally. It does that. I mean, it has its own brain, kind of. It's a weird electric thing.
Yeah, and maybe you could get that if you, like, set your guitar up against your amp and just start letting it ring in with the feedback and that.
Sure. I mean, the guitarist will get full of stuff that's like extended as well. I mean, you know, that's like when I was talking about, we were talking about Nels Klein earlier, is like early on, like I would watch him play at like The Smell or something, and he'd just be like doing all this shit that like isn't even guitaristic. You know what I mean?
With the little toy ray gun?
Yeah, totally.
And the fucking egg whisker.
Yeah, egg whisker. Yeah.
Look, we're at the end of the second hour, January 15, 2021. This Watt Pedro Show special guest, Emmett Kelly. Hold tight for hour three. January 15, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt Pedro Show. Peter Show, start third hour off with F. Zantuin, Emmett Kelly. I mean, how do you name these tunes? You don't know.
F. Zantuin. I don't know. I mean, like, that was like a friend of mine, at least three guys that we collect fake names, you know, weird. And I think that was on the name. It was just like some dude's name.
F is like the initial of the first name. Okay, yeah. D. Boone, right. Okay, you know, he got that from E. Bloom, Eric Bloom in the Blue Oyster Cult. On the second album, it said E. Bloom, Stung Guitar. And we were like, what the fuck is a Stung Guitar? I don't know, but I want to be him. And then his name was, like, close to it, right? Eric Bloom, Dennis Boone. So he put E. Bloom. All right, D. Boone. That's a true story. Yeah, yeah. I don't have something that neat. But a lot of thought we both had fake punk names. Like Don Bonebreak, that's his real name, too. Sometimes you're born with a good punk name.
Bonebreak is his real name?
Shit you not.
That's shit
you not. Then we had Jam Number 2 live around 1993, Pedro Party, featuring the late, great Richard Derrick and Brother Crane, who's up in Idaho these days. And then finally, Tollum and Dietrich. That's John Dietrich from Deerhoof, who's a great guitar man. 05, some improv they did. I think John just lost his older brother. So very sad. I got to make a record with John and Tim Barnes was called the Hand of Man Band, and really, there's something about improvised music. It takes a kind of, like you were off-air people, we were talking about Nels Klein, and Emmett here says he was, what'd you say about him? He's the first guy?
He was just like the first guy I saw who like is a actually great guitar player and a full-on noise freak.
Are you aware of a band called DNA?
Yeah, totally.
And this guy named Arto Lindsay?
Yeah, amazing.
I got to see that band. They played the Hong Kong Cafe. Now, it wasn't the first version with the organ guy. It was with the bass man from Peru, Tim Wright. But, man, it was the power trio. It was like the most black power trio I've ever seen in my life. I mean, that band, I think there's an album. I remember there was a single. It was called Little Ants, but that was with the organ dude. And I guess the lady was just learning drums at the time, and Arto played the trippiest guitar. But you're right, Nels, because he told me he spent some years in the 70s, he called it Jazz Island, so he learned fusion.
Right. Where the heck is Jazz Island?
But then he fucking heard Sonic Youth, and he told me it changed his life.
Yeah, for sure. Gateway.
You were saying something about Sonic Youth, right? Sugar?
Yeah, well, it was just like early on, you know? I was like 12 or something.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you got common ground. You and Nels Klein were both profoundly affected by Sonic Youth. I want to play Brass Snakes.
Time and space. The ground below you there's your tide around your grave. Lie down faster. Force of gravity won't come back. Yeah, you're velocity. You're velocity.
Walk for Pedro, show last music for this edition. Emmett Kelly with Brass Snakes, then Tim Holehouse, Velocity, and finally Troopa Troopa out of Danzig. Tim Holehouse out of England. Longing from Troopa Troopa. You know, this music that we've been playing from Brother Emmett here, all recent stuff, people. In fact, Brass Snakes, he says he did during the summer, during the altercations and stuff. Also, not just altercations, we're under the COVID-19 and with the quarantino, and so he's not sitting on his hands. Are you trading files?
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of that, actually, mostly in the past few months, sending people, trying to work together with people remotely, you know?
Do you still got your connects with your Chicago musician friends?
Yeah, in fact, I've been doing a project with Michael Zerang. Are you familiar with him?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and a lot of stuff with Joshua Abrams and, you know, some various other people. But yeah, like, I've been working on something with Devin Hoff. And that's
the bass band.
Yeah, totally.
We got an album coming out with Joe Berardi called the Emma Goldman Bust Out Brigade, and he's an incredible cat. Yeah, yeah. Cool. Nels Klein Singers for a while.
Yeah, for sure.
I think originally from maybe Boulder, then he was in East Bay. He's in Buffalo these days.
I think he's from, like, Fort Collins or something.
That's it. That's it. Because his daddy was a blues. One time he sends his pop to Pedro to have lunch with me. Not with him. with his pop.
Did you see me?
Yeah, yeah.
So cool.
I fucking thought it was Boulder. You know, it was in Fort Collins. There's Billy and Descendants. He's got a studio in the Blaster Room. So can you tell me about the process? What do you? How do you get the music going with your buddies online?
Well, I mean, like, you know, it never seemed like something that we'd wanted to do ever, you know what I mean? Like, we'd, like, send emails of music, be like, what do you think, you know? But now it's different, you know? And I was working on some recordings early in the pandemic with Bonnie Prince Billy, and we were doing them remotely, and it was just kind of like a good experience, you know? And then I would send stuff to people all over the world. Like, I sent stuff to Jim White in Australia and to
the drummer man, Jim White. Yeah, yeah. Incredible. A lot of hair on his back. I love this guy.
Yeah.
And he's one of my favorite drummers ever, man. Last time I saw him play was with Cat Power.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
With Sean. He was tearing it up.
We made a record together. We have a band called The Double. I'll send you the record if you want.
I didn't know that. But because his guy, Mick, right?
Mick Turner, yeah.
Yeah, I saw his solo. He's wearing a Hawaiian shirt and shit, wooden buttons. That was like Pedro in the 70s in high school. You know, I'm class of 76, and I was like, whoa, Mick. I'm getting a flashback here. But, I mean, all those guys. And Warren now is like fucking Nick Cave's main music dude.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But what I was asking about the process, like, does one dude go first? Like, they send out the first wave file?
It depends on how the project goes. I mean, lately I've been doing it, so I have all this weird unfinished stuff, and so I would send something to somebody that I want to, that I like, and that I like want to play with and hang out with, and be like, hey man, I just made this. Do you hear anything in it? You know, and you know, sometimes they do. Like the thing with Devin was amazing. Like I sent him this really screwed up, kind of, I don't even know how to describe it, like noised out beat thing that was like made on the synthesizer. And he came back with this like full on, like fully beautiful, like melodic bowed bass part. And I was like, whoa, holy shit. You know? And now we have a piano player joining in on the project. And just, so it's just like, who knows? It's sort of the same as like any of the synthesizer stuff. It's like, sending stuff in the dark, just be like, I don't know what the hell this is. Like, do you know what it is? You know, and then they do. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but it seems a lot more collaborative, because if you had a group of cats and you're going to meet at the crack bed, here, guys, I'm going to bring you a demo, and this is what the song is going to sound like.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a whole different trip, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Because it's like, I mean, you know, here's the bass line or something. It's like, I don't know. It's like, Here's a mysterious unknown thing of music. Like, it does it even exist? You know, like, you tell me, you know, and then the musician's like, oh, I think maybe it does, you know?
Yeah, well, the making is in the doing. It's not,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's, you know, I was reading somewhere, you know, this plague shit actually has been going on for thousands of years. And in fact, King Lear was written down during a locked down in London.
Interesting.
You know, and so, you know, I know for everybody it's kind of singular for them, but the human race has been through this shit. But I kind of like, there's something organic about this, even though it's weird. Yeah, you're not in the room with the cats, but you still, you know, here's a piece of creativity. Now what? Now it's my turn.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, trying to communicate with people has been really hard this year, you know, and especially musically. I mean, I haven't played music. I mean, I barely played any music this year with anyone in the room, you know what I mean? And it's
right.
But driving me crazy.
Yeah, but in a way, isn't music kind of a lifeline then?
Oh, absolutely. And then, you know, and it's different. You know, you do things differently when you have your own personal time with stuff, too. You know, so it's like, it's, you know, it's interesting recording things with people, because it's like you get a piece of music and then you have this weird time that you can spend like experimenting or doing things. It's way different than being put on the spot, you know.
Right. You don't have to worry about personal dynamics and bullshit.
Yeah, or like time seemingly wasted, you know.
Even the look of the dude's face.
Yeah, totally. Or like, you know, like it's like, wait, I gotta roll this joint real fast.
Emmett, where can people find you on the internet?
I have an Instagram called Dr. Faustroll. It's like a DR_FAUSTROLL.
But there's no Emmett Kelly website?
No, I don't have one. I don't
you
know.
You will, because it's like having your own fucking fanzine. You'll dig it.
I know. I'm gonna make something one day.
And then you can have links to those other telephone poles where you put up flyers.
Yeah.
Emmett, I love what you're doing, man. Yesterday I had a guy, you know, in his late 70s, Mr. Bob Marsh, doing improv music. He calls it jumping from the pole. And that, you know what I mean? I think that's what you're doing. I like this idea, man. You're an inspiration.
Hell yeah, man. Well, let's do something together.
Okay, you got it. Yeah. Flow me away, file.
Yeah, I'll send you something.
All right, and I'll bring it right back.
Hell yeah.
You know, and yeah, we'll come back on the show and we'll tell people about it, okay?
All right, man. Okay. Good to talk to you.
Absolutely. People, it's been the January 15, 2021 edition of WAP Fido Show. Keep your powder dry.